And welcome to another edition of Digital Nerdage. I'm Pat, your host. With me, as always, is Corey.
The smart one.
Well, you could say that. You're the one that wasn't here for the last time we tried to do this opening. And we have a very, very special guest that we're so excited to talk to. Freddie E. Williams II, DC artist, is joining us today on the podcast.
Yes, hello. Thank you very much for having me on.
Hi, Freddie.
Well, thanks for doing this. It's great to talk to you. You know, we're really excited to talk to you about some of the stuff that you've got going on. Freddie is just off of a DC exclusive contract, if my information is correct.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just recently on the Green Arrow book. He has done Flash in before. He has done Robin, JSA All-Stars, Countdown 52, Aquaman, Blue Beetle. And, you know, he's been around since about 2005 when he started over at DC. We're working on the Seven Soldiers project. Seven Soldiers, Mr. Miracle, which is an Eisner Award winning series, which was amazing. So, you know, from 2006 to 2012, he was under an exclusive contract. And he's really well known because of the fact that he draws almost exclusively digitally. So, you know, we're really happy to have him. And you know, I think it's really cool to talk to and kind of have the opportunity to pick the brain of some of these artists. So, I guess, you know, the first question we've got for you is just how long have you been drawing?
Let's see. My earliest memories are of me using lined paper from my sister's room and drawing superheroes, you know, like it was her. My sister is 3 years older than me. And so she had, you know, when she was going to school and I was not yet, I remember using I'm trying to think of the name of it, but it had like a big Native American, you know, headdress, you know, chief. Maybe it's called Big Chief Paper or something like that.
Oh, wow.
But drawing a whole bunch of stuff on that. So, I mean, I've been drawing since my earliest memories. And then I remember my mom once took some of my better, higher graded papers from school when I was in school and stapled them all together and put like Freddie's Good Papers or something on the front. And then when I turned it over, it's like it was my first sketchbook. So what I mean by that is, you know, I didn't know what a sketchbook was. I'd never had one before, but I then started drawing on the reverse sides of all my good papers. But I started getting really serious. My mindset became more serious whenever I was about 14. And that's whenever I was a freshman in high school. And I met my best friend at the time, Tyrone Crockett. He was a senior, and he showed me the How to Draw Comics, the Marvel Way book. And we used to draw quite a bit, you know, from that. And he taught me with the assistance of the How to Draw Comics, the Marvel Way book, how to draw with shapes and, you know, constructing figures like that instead of trying to draw every body part individually and drawing it perfectly the first time. You know, that's a mistake, I think. That whenever I'm giving, like when I'm on a panel or giving demonstrations, I try to stress to newer artists that you are not attempting to draw the final line the first time. You're trying to draw very lightly and draw, you know, a million sketchy bad lines, because somewhere in there you'll find the correct lines, and then you start to draw those out and stuff, or enhance them is what I mean. So that was when I was about 14, and then. But I didn't start getting stuff published until like, you know, 2002 or something like that. So that gives you kind of a cross section of I've been drawing the entire time, but there's just different points along that line that were like new chapter headings, you know, in my desire to become a comic book artist.
Gotcha. You know, it's amazing to hear, you know, processes and things like that from people. You never know what it does that makes people do it. So that's kind of cool to see just how much it was ingrained with you for so long.
You know, there was I recently attended a high school career art fair thing where, you know, students, but mainly seniors, but any of the students that went to the school who were interested in a career in commercial art could come. And there was a guy who asked me, he was looking through some of my portfolio binders that I had out, and he asked, he referenced a picture of Batman that I had drawn. He said, how do you know how to draw Batman this way? And I thought what he meant was, you know, is there a script? I figured he was asking me, is there a script that the writer gives you? And I said, well, usually there's a script and it'll say, you know, Batman swinging over the city or something. But in this situation, I just drew him just because I thought that would be a cool shot. And he said, no, I mean, how do you know how to draw Batman looking this way? And then I thought he meant of all the versions of Batman's costume. And, you know, this was around the time of the New 52 coming out. So I thought that's what he meant. So I said, well, you know, since I drew this for myself, I just drew the classic Batman costume because that's the one that I gravitate towards more. And he's like, no, I mean, how did you know how to, like, draw his body this way? And then I thought he meant, like, anatomy. And so I described how to draw with shapes and stuff. And then he still asked, no, I mean, just how do you know how to draw it? And it was like it felt like an infinitely regressing question, because it almost keys all the way back to what you were just saying about why somebody draws the way that they draw. And it was difficult to answer, but what I stumbled my way through was, you know, if I describe to you a scenario and, you know, like Batman swinging through the city, and, you know, he lands and then he beats up some thugs or something, you can picture it like a movie in your mind. And if you were to just take a snapshot of one of those, you know, just still, you know, freeze it in time and then start trying to sketch lightly the shapes that are in the body of the Batman that's at that angle, and then you start trying to draw that out, you know, enhancing and trying to finalize the lines, that's how you draw it. But ultimately, I can't explain it any more than that. It's just there's something to do with the translation of going from imagination to those initial lines of trying to actualize what you see in your brain. So I still don't think I fully answered his question, but I'm not really sure I could, because it's trying to explain something that's kind of beyond maybe, you know, logic extrapolation. Yeah. I'm not sure how else to break it down, really, you know.
No, I definitely get that, because it's basically trying to, you know, describe the way your mind works, really, is what mm-hmm. what it is. I can definitely see how that would be just infinitely difficult to do.
Yeah. Yeah. It was.
Corey, you want to go ahead and ask the next question?
Sure, why not?
You've been uncharacteristically quiet.
Well, I'll move on to one of the questions I really want to know about. In addition to, you know, your recent run of Green Arrow, you've done previous works, Robin, Flash, JSA All-Stars. Out of all the stuff that you've worked on so far, what was your favorite book to work on?
That's hard to say. I think the, you know, because there would be different favorites for different reasons, but if I had to choose one, it would probably be the issue of Countdown to Final Crisis. Maybe it was just called Countdown, whichever. I mean, anyway, it was issue 3, and it was the one that I drew, this big fight scene between Superman and Darkseid. That was the first time I had a chance to work with Mike Carlin, who's been around at Marvel and DC for, you know, for a really long time. He's a great guy. We ended up becoming friends because he was my editor after that. But basically everything kind of fired at the right time for that. I got to work with Keith Giffen. Countdown was written by a whole bunch of great writers. And I was drawing my favorite character ever is Superman, and my favorite one of his villains, or even though he didn't start off as a Superman villain, is Darkseid. But, you know, I've had other favorite moments or favorite times. I recently illustrated a Ninja Turtles cover that hasn't come out yet, and a G.I. Joe cover and a Ghostbusters cover, because, like, now that I'm out of my exclusive, I'm trying to branch out and kind of touch base on all the characters and types of books that I've always wanted to work on, that are outside of DC, of course. So, I mean, all of those are, you know, Ninja Turtles is one of my very favorite ever. So drawing that was incredibly fun too. And would be a favorite moment, but that issue of Countdown, and then there was some other stuff mixed in there. Some of my stuff on Robin was really fun. The issue of Blue Beetle that I drew, of the, let's see, it was pre-52, you know, but it was issue 15, I think. That one had this scene where Superman guest starred, and Superman and I think this might have been the first time I got to draw Superman in a comic book. And he was, him and Superman and Blue Beetle were flying together in a very fatherly sort of moment. And that was a favorite time. It my father left our family whenever we were very young. And so Superman psychologically represents a lot of, like, he kind of holds the father role in my life, because that's, you know, he was just kind of a, that sort of figure psychologically. And so getting to draw him felt like visiting with my father. It was a very trippy emotional experience, you know, whenever I was drawing him. It felt very emotional, which I didn't expect. So it also kind of, I hadn't braced for it. It caught me off guard. That was a favorite too. So
I think those were some of the more intimate moments in Comic Zone. When you get a chance to connect at an emotional level like that really probably reflected in your work more than anything else.
I hope so. Yeah. I mean, it certainly felt, you know, when I look back at the pages now, all I see are the mistakes, you know, because that's just how artists usually are. But at the time, it felt pretty profound.
Yeah, a couple of different friends that are artists, and in fact, we've had Ryan Stegman on before, and he's the same. He said the same thing was, I always find the mistakes in my art. So that's probably definitely something that's kind of ingrained in an artist.
Ryan Stegman, I love that guy. We're buddies from a while back.
Everybody loves Ryan. Yeah,
everybody does.
we've you know, known Ryan through him coming up to the Cherry Capital Con, which you will be a guest of this year.
Yes.
So he's been up here a couple times, and we had a great time with him this year, and he was kind enough to join us before, but. You know, back to what we're, you know, the topic at hand. You know, was there any specific artists that you that really, you know, were the type of things you wanted to see? I know, if I remember correctly, I saw something. My brain's going away. I'm trying to remember.
It was never there.
You read so many things sometimes. And I'm trying to remember if it was you that I was reading about. It was influenced, you know, by. No, it must not be. I'm looking at you.
Well, no. I mean, feel free to kick it out there. And if it's Jim, incorrect, we can just edit it.
It was something about Jim Lee.
That was probably me.
Uncanny X-Men.
Oh, yeah, there it is. Uncanny. There it is. I couldn't find the line. I knew I'd read it on your wiki.
Yeah. I mean, my artwork does not reflect a Jim Lee feel, I don't think. I mean, I don't feel like I'm trying to draw like Jim Lee anymore. When I was in high school, I wanted to be a Jim Lee clone. But the two books that, you know, that really got me to decide, that pushed me into wanting to draw professionally, was Uncanny X-Men 272, which was done by Jim Lee, and then ElfQuest Book 3, which is like the oversized graphic novel collection of ElfQuest books. And if you took both of those books, and that ElfQuest is written and drawn by Wendy Penny, and if you combined Jim Lee and Wendy Penny's artwork and averaged it out, you would get my artwork. Basically, those are the two, you know, the two big influences, and you also roughly land near Arthur Adams. And so I don't feel like I'm trying to ape Arthur Adams or any artist in particular, but I feel like whenever on my best day, I kind of sort of get near Arthur Adams, you know, a little bit. I'm not trying to compare myself in quality. He's by far a better artist than me, but hopefully you understand what I'm saying.
Oh yeah, it's not that you're necessarily trying to copy exactly what they do, but you've got those things that you picked up from them that you kind of saw them do, and you're like, oh, that would kind of be good in my type of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
You're not trying to imitate them exactly. You're just kind of trying to take the things that you see that are attractive to you and pull that out of their work and put it in yours.
Yeah, there's a long list of artists that I feel that way about. Including Frank Miller and Mike Mignola, Travis Charé, I think that's how you pronounce it, Lionel Francis Yu, of course Arthur Adams, like I already said, J. Scott Campbell. There's a long list of guys who basically, when you're looking at their work, whether conscious or not, although I think it's important to make a conscious effort to note, to either draw, try to take a mental snapshot or even draw like little notes, like make shorthand of how they do certain things in their style to incorporate into your own. And I think, I get a lot of Q&A about my work in progress methods because I wrote the DC Comics Guide to Digitally Drawing Comics and I have a YouTube page and stuff. And a lot of younger artists want to know how do you develop a style. And it is an amalgam of your favorite artists, all bits and pieces of those artists, things that you like about them, and then you throw them into a blender, and then when you mix it up, part of you and your it's like you as an artist kind of congeals all that together. So there's a lot of stuff in there that comes out that's original, but there's those mental shorthand notes that when you're drawing this thing, it could be as simple as drawing bullet holes. You really like how whatever artist it was, had drawn them. So you're mentally referencing them. Or if you're not getting it right, you might even literally pull out their comic book and look for how they drew those bullet holes or broken glass or whatever it is. So it all kind of adds together and then gives you this other thing. It gives you this X, the equation equals an X, and that's your style.
Gotcha.
Well, since you brought it up, you do pretty much all of your stuff digitally. What made you decide to do that? And then, I guess, beyond that too, what made you write a book about it?
It was a very organic process as to why I started. And that was, at the time I was working for some small publishing company and was creating layouts on printer paper, which is 8.5 by 11. And then I would scan that in and email my roughs. I'd rough out a whole book on paper and then email the JPEGs to the artist / editor at the time. And he was a very picky person. Plus I was very unskilled as well. So he was asking for a lot of changes, both because he was nitpicky and because I was not a skilled storyteller. And at first I was making those changes. I would get out the printer paper again, erase stuff and redraw. And that's just kind of a pain because there's, if the adjustment you're trying to make is to make the central figure smaller or bigger on the page, that's not something that's easily accomplished if you want to keep that pose to just scale it up, unless you're doing it digitally. So then I started making adjustments digitally, and then at some point I just started roughing out entire pages just in the computer, and then that evolved to me roughing out entire books and doing what are called breakdown drawings, where it's still sketchy, it's still rough, but it's you can tell what everything is. You can see all the correct anatomy and facial expressions and all this stuff. And then I would lightbox it I would print it out, large on like two different pieces of printer paper, and then tape those to the back of my artboard and lightbox it. And then I was like, this is so monotonous because I was redrawing it. And then instead of that, I then just started printing directly onto the artboard in light blue once I had accomplished my layout. At some point I ended up just trying to draw, seeing how far I could take a page digitally without ever touching paper. And that was basically it. It was very organic. It took me about four years maybe to traverse that course. And I had no guidance in it other than, I knew Photoshop, and at the time I was working at Hallmark Cards. So I'm positive some of that, the way that they did things infiltrated in my brain, the way that they would, their workflow, I guess. And so I had no idea. I mean, I was positive it would be foolish to assume that I was the first person to work digitally. I knew that Brian Boland worked digital, and I knew he used Photoshop, but I have no, even now, I know very little about his working methods just because he does not, doesn't share that sort of information to my knowledge. So although I knew other people use digital effects or digital processes, I did not know what they were. So over the course of a couple of years, I was posting on different message forums, and I think the main thing that got people asking me a lot of questions was I had made in Photoshop. If you want to create a perspective drawing, normally you would need to create a point of perspective and all the radiating lines that come from that point in which to draw your buildings and stuff. You might have to do that. Although you're doing it digitally, you might have to do it the hard way, where you're drawing a single line at a time, or five or six lines, and then you duplicate those to make your grid. And instead of doing that, I made this perspective path that has like a single point of origin, and then all these radiating lines, and then you get it scaled to the correct size, and then you stroke it into your, that's a Photoshop term. You stroke the path into your artwork, and that way you have your perspective grid made. And I started sharing this for free, and that made a lot of people ask me other questions about how else I worked digitally. And that showed me that there was a lot of interest with that. And skipping ahead a couple more years, I remember I was at the point, I wasn't necessarily thinking of writing a book, but I had put together a lot of tutorials that I had shared, but they were not extensive. It takes a lot to kind of write in a more than a shorthand all these tutorial things. And I remember one of my friends suggesting that I should write a book, and I said, I'm just not sure, and who am I to write this book? I'm just this guy. It's not like I'm some famous artist. And this was a guy named Carlo, who worked at Hallmark at the time. He goes, he said something like, well, the book is going to get written. The question is if you're going to be the one to write it. And that was like the catalyzing moment that what he meant was somebody's eventually going to write a book about digitally illustrating comics, and, why not it be you? And so that made me start pushing forward, where I started developing all the outlines and all this other stuff. So, but I've always liked to share stuff, and that's one of the reasons I have the YouTube page, and I answer a bunch of questions on there. And, none of my YouTube videos are monetized. I'm not doing it for money. It's just because I like to share the info and like to help out up and coming guys.
Well, that's cool. And just so, we make sure we bring it up, the book is called The DC Comics Guide to Digitally Drawing Comics. So anybody that's looking to do digital drawing, that's definitely, I've seen some, bits and pieces of it. I have not had my hands on it. Unfortunately, the local library doesn't have a copy, and I didn't order a copy for myself. sorry.
Yeah. No, that's okay.
My ability to draw is about as good as my two-year-old, so...
Well, and just to make clear to anyone who is listening, who wants, who's curious about the contents of the book, it is not a how to draw figure anatomy or facial expression type book. It is assuming that those are parallel and separate courses of study that you are doing by yourself using other books, such as, other tutorial books on how to draw anatomy and stuff. This is all about just using Adobe Photoshop. There's a brief mention of Google SketchUp, which is a 3D modeling program. The point that I'm making is you will still need to know how to draw. This is just a way to, once you know that, it's a way, working digitally makes working out compositions much easier, makes, getting your proportions right on a figure makes that easier. Making adjustments like, you have somebody motioning or pointing off panel in the incorrect way, so it messes up your storytelling eye flow. Working digital helps you a lot with those things, or reusing background elements like a city that you drew really detailed, and then you can use it in a couple different panels or something. that's where working digital is really beneficial. But, you know, it's not going to teach you how to draw a face. It's just teaching you, you know, how to do those other things digitally to make your life more convenient and your time is more effective.
Gotcha. Now, the way you got into, I guess, the major part of the business, you've obviously been drawing and you said you worked at Hallmark and things, but, you know, getting into comic book drawing was DC, was you actually submitted a portfolio to an open call at San Diego Comic-Con back in 2005. I mean, just, I like myself, I can't even imagine what that was like walking into something like that. And I mean, was this just, hey, drop your stuff off? Or was this a, hey, let's talk to you while you drop your stuff off? Or I mean, how was that process?
It was one of those things and then the other. What I mean is the open call is considered like the front door of getting in. You're like, you don't have to know anybody. At the larger conventions, DC and Marvel, and maybe other companies too, but I only know about the DC and Marvel, have these big elaborate displays or booths, and usually somewhere on their little lot of land, they'll have a slot in the wall of their display booth, you know, background for you to put your portfolios or something, and that's kind of like the blind submission or the open call. And at the every evening after one of the days of the show, a handful of editors will look through, will glance through all of the portfolios that were dropped off that day. And the ones that show promise, they'll pull out. And the ones that don't show promise, they get trashed. But, you know, these are photocopies of portfolios, so they're not throwing away any original art. Right. So the handful that they pulled out that they liked, they will, the next day, put those people's names on, you know, like a dry erase board or whatever it is. DC uses like an actual monitor or whatever that says today's talent search picks or choices or whatever are these five people, you know, and then they'll have like certain times and places for you to meet. So those are like the specific, you know, sort of the mundane details of how you get chosen. But, you know, you have to know what to put in your portfolio and, you know, you have to get to the convention, you know, for at least 2 days, because you have to be there one day to drop it off and hope that you get picked, and then the next day for the review. A place like San Diego Con, you know, is just so busy and crazy. Trying to even get there is difficult. The first year that I was there, I did not get selected by DC, but I got selected by Marvel to do a review. And things went badly, and the editor that was supposed to review me was unable to make it to the review. And I just lost my chance to have the review. That's very, you know, it was very disheartening at the time, you know, because I don't live in San Diego. I live in Missouri. So I spent a lot of money to get out there. And this is not even me blaming the editor. Stuff like that happens. I know now because I'm on the other side of the table. But the point that I'm making is it's hard to get through this front door, but it's a good shot. And I'm proof that it can and does happen. Other people sometimes know somebody who puts their name, you know, who gets them hired through their editor or something. In any case, I dropped off a portfolio on a Friday in the 2005 DC talent search bin, and then Saturday morning saw my name on the list. I flipped out. I was very excited. I got to the review room, you know, like 20 minutes early, just to make absolutely sure I was not going to miss anything. There was like four editors and or art directors, four individuals from DC Comics that were there to review portfolios, and there was like 10 people perhaps to be reviewed. And I was pretty nervous because I think they might have gone alphabetically, but I was like one of the last people. I was not a part of the first wave of people to be reviewed. Other people were getting reviewed ahead of me, and I was nervous that time would run out and that I'd have a repeat of 2005 where the editors would go, sorry, we got to go, and sorry, you know. But they were all very good and stayed a very long time to make sure everyone got a good, thorough review. And I reviewed with Richard Bruning, who was executive art director or something at the time. He was the one... you would see his work in a lot of design a design sense, not necessarily art, drawing individual characters or something, but he would compose things, you know, like a designer would. And he was very nice, very favorable. Looked through my portfolio. My portfolio, even though it was all created digitally, but I had printed out all of the pages at 11 by 17 size and put them in a portfolio case so that it basically looked like photocopies of traditional art is what I was hoping it would look like, because I wasn't sure how they would react to somebody being all digital. And we got about halfway through the portfolio. Richard had seen a brick wall that I had used. You know, I used digital tools to create the brick pattern, but I tried to make it look hand-drawn. And he made a comment like, oh, man, that must have taken forever to draw all those bricks or something like that. And I was, you know, I had to decide to either say, yeah, it sure did, and I drew them all by hand, you know, like to say something like that, or to say that I would work digitally and then maybe risk him being turned off by that. But I told him I worked digitally. He was actually excited by it. And I now know, just because we've spoken and become more friends and stuff, that, you know, he's a real enthusiast of digital technology and using that in graphic arts and comics and stuff. So we connected, I think we connected over that. And then I stayed in contact with him the next couple of months. And showed him a lot of the stuff that I was still drawing so that he could see that I was fast and hopefully still improving. And then the following October, which was just a couple months away, is when I got my first work, which was the Seven Soldiers, Mr. Miracle, with DC. So that's kind of the short version of how I got in at DC. But that took years of other false leads, you know, of blind submissions, the, you know, physical paper sort of route, and trying to do small independent published work that just never goes anywhere. And you still kind of learn so that you're payment, but nobody ever pays you, you know, actual cash, and, you know, a long list of stuff like that.
Yeah. Corey?
Yeah, okay. Corey.
What?
What are you doing, Corey?
He gets quiet, and it kind of scares me, because when he's quiet, bad things are happening.
Yeah, you don't want to know. Okay, moving on to the next question. I think I'll go with this one. Your exclusive contract with DC is ending, or ended, or whatever. Here, it's ended now. Would you consider signing another exclusive contract with them, or with another company? And do you plan to still work with DC regularly, even without the exclusive contract?
I currently am still working with DC. I'm working on a unannounced, so far, monthly, and some other side stuff with them. So definitely we'll continue to work with them. And as far as signing an exclusive with them or anyone else, it greatly depends on the terms of the exclusive. So if the terms were, I have no like moral or, you know, business or ethical sort of objection to working under an exclusive. It just depends on the terms. As long as they're favorable for and fair, then I'm totally cool with that.
So, you kind of hinted at it. You do have another project with DC coming up that's unannounced. We always seem to catch the artists as the projects are just before they're announced. We caught our other guest just before his current project was announced, and the secrecy of these things. Oh boy, so we're probably looking at June, probably before that book would be out. Or do you have a timeline of when the book might be coming? Or can you?
Yeah, that's a safe assessment, between May or June, around in there. I mean, I'm very early in the process right now. So, I mean, meaning I just got the first script for the first issue this last Friday. So, I mean, it's really brand new. And before that, in between Green Arrow and the last issue of Green Arrow I drew, which was 16, and now they had me still working on side stuff. So I have, even after I've been working for them monthly since October of 2005, and it's been without miss every month. So, but it's really fun getting to draw stuff, to draw a variety of stuff. Like right now I'm doing stuff with, IDW and with Dark Horse. So, and there's other stuff that, you know, where you're exchanging emails with editors and figuring out what other stuff you can do, so with other companies even. So it's really fun to play with all these different toys.
Yeah, you're like, I don't have to worry about just playing with my X-Men. I can play with everybody. Well, that's a bad analogy, sorry.
Yeah, I don't have to worry about just playing with my Green Arrow toys. I can play with all these others.
Yeah, there we go. I'm like, wait a minute, X-Men, bad call.
I would love to play with the X-Men toys. That would be amazing. That's, you know, Captain America is my favorite Marvel character, but I've got probably 30 favorite characters over there. So, you know, and the X-Men are in there, and there's a lot, you know, Punisher. There's a lot of characters I'd love to draw.
Now, you mentioned before that you, the first time you were at San Diego Comic-Con, you had, well, you were going to have your review with Marvel. How do you think things would have changed for you if you had gotten that review and you had been able to work with Marvel instead of DC? Do you think that would have changed your view on things, or
completely.
Is there a certain thing?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Is there certain Marvel projects that you really wish you would have had a chance to get your hands on, or even still do?
Oh, there definitely is. I mean, as far as how things would have been different, you know, I think it's the difference between you know, moving to, you know, whenever you, like, whatever school you went to from high school. You know, it's like if you went to one college versus the other college, you know, it's a dramatic difference that you can't really quantify. But there's that. Assuming that I continue to be relevant and hopefully a good artist and continue to deliver things on time and are easy to work with the assumption of all those things, I could theoretically work for every single company on every character I've ever wanted to draw, you know, just on a long enough timeline. So I hope that that is my future, that I remain, you know, relevant and easy to work with and good and whatever other sort of positive things I could say. So anyway, there's plenty of stuff that, you know, and if I had gotten picked up by Marvel on that first go around, you know, then there would have been, you know, and if I worked for them for 6 years or whatever it is, I would be lamenting that I had not had a chance to draw stuff at DC, and you know what I mean? So yeah, it's, you know, it is the same sort of, it could have been the same sort of outcome. I honestly don't know though.
Yeah, that's always tough to kind of speculate. Like, oh, what if you took road B instead of road A? You know, one of the things that always kind of interests me is the relationship between writers and artists. You know, it can be a challenge. At least it's seemingly to take the words and the scripts that's given to you and turn it into this whole piece of art. In the combination, were there any artists that you've worked with that were just, or excuse me, writers that you've worked with that were absolutely amazing to work with and you really connected with, or vice versa, or are there any that you haven't worked with that you're really just really hope you get to?
Yes, on both accounts. I mean, it would. There was, I think, about every writer I've worked with, I enjoyed. Either as just a fan to read their stuff, or it was a real hoot because I got to interact with them in a collaborative fashion, and they were fun to work with, and we had good conversations. I mean, it's sort of a mixed bag as far as the reasons that I've enjoyed working with different writers. That's one of the important things. You know, we're comic book professionals in general, but specifically comic book artists are drawing and are involved in these projects. For more hours a day than like the average person works at their job, you know, that like a person who's working like a 9-to-5 sort of job, you know, and then they go home and they have like their evenings off. They might have other stuff on the side, but you know what I mean? Like most comic book professionals are working 12-to-15-hour days without fail most of their career, to produce monthly work and just to make sure you don't miss out on some good opportunity. So it's important to invest yourself in whatever way you can. So there's I've worked with a lot of writers. I worked, you know, my first work for DC was with Grant Morrison. That was the Seven Soldiers, Mr. Miracle project. I worked with him again briefly whenever I did some of the work on 52 and on, I'm pretty sure he was involved in Countdown. I'm not 100% sure on that, but I think he was. And then I worked with Mark Waid very briefly on The Flash and some Robin stuff, like a little origin story thing. And let's see. I know as soon as I get off the podcast, I'm going to think of other names, but...
Don't worry. I forget enough.
Say again.
Don't worry. I forget enough information to cover it. So
yeah, and if there's any writers that I've worked with that end up listening to this, know that I'm not deliberately excluding anyone's name. To be honest, I'm kind of drawing a blank because I haven't had a lot of sleep in the last week. But But as far as writers that I'd like to work with, I mean, Alan Moore would be amazing to work with if there was some sort of project that would ever kind of lure him out, like if there was an independent thing, even if he's interested in that. I mean, because he seems like he's kind of retired completely, even though for a while he was just doing independent stuff, and then he did that weird fanzine thing, and then he kind of just has disappeared. And let's see. Jeff Johns, I have... other than his involvement with 52 and Countdown, I would love to work with him like on a real, like a long-term basis. Scott Snyder, Chris Claremont at some point. There's a long list of guys, people, but hopefully I'll be around long enough to actualize all of those goals.
You bring up Scott Snyder, and that I have always been a big... My two favorite comic book characters have always been Green Lantern and Batman, and just honestly, the way that Scott Snyder has been doing Batman for the New 52 is just absolutely amazing. It's mind blowing. it's an amazing business, comic books. It's always kind of been so interesting to me, but. I guess one of the things I'm more curious, is there anything that you've been reading, any book, any series, anything like that, that you've read that people are missing, that they're missing out on, that you think they should be reading?
Let's see. Recently I've been reading, just to refamiliarize myself with the characters from the Ninja Turtles, I read for the first time the entire new series from IDW, the ongoing, and I'm halfway through the micro series that's like 7 issues or something, like a series of one shots, written by Tom Waltz. I'm a big fan of Robert Kirkman. That's a name that I would like to work with. But he, of course, is a great writer, and he has written, Invincible is like a longtime favorite of mine. I've been reading it since it first came out, and I was one of the only, like the first couple of issues sold really poorly. I was one of the people who actually bought those. I say that because that's the first time really that I've been in at the ground floor of a new comic book series that ended up becoming really popular and really good and worth a lot of money, So it would be great to work with him as well. But Invincible's a book. I just got volume 17, yesterday of the trades, because I just collect the trades. But Invincible is popular enough, so it's not like people are missing out on it. But I bring that up because the Ninja Turtles is written by Tom Waltz, and I do not feel like Tom is attempting to imitate Kirkman's style of writing, but he is similarly good at characterization and inter-character relationships, and he makes it seem effortless whenever he's having the characters have a dialogue between each other and recapping events from previous issues to bring newer readers up to speed or to remind readers what had happened, because it'll become relevant soon. When I was reading the series, that stood out to me, that he was very good at that. As well as, it's just a good book, and there's been some good artists on it and stuff on the Ninja Turtles. That's about it. I mean, I do not actually have a lot of time. If I have in quotes downtime, I'm usually creating something of my own, either a YouTube video or I'm answering sort of not just email. I mean, it's not just where I'm writing emails, but where I'm constructing mini tutorials to put into a larger project later. It's hard for me to find the time to read more than just a title or two at a time.
Gotcha. And you even answered one of my other questions while you were at it. So that was good.
What was the other question?
Oh, just what you do in your downtime.
Oh, yeah. The only other thing, the only non-work related downtime activity that I have, if that statement or caveat made any sense, is I occasionally play Magic the Gathering, the card game, and it's that's do you guys play that?
I haven't played in a long time, but I used to play. It's too expensive of a habit for me.
Yeah.
I haven't been competitive for a while, but yes, I do play.
Yeah, that's I'm like that as well. It's not something that's easy for me to keep up with. So there's every time that I do play, find the time to play. I have a really good friend named Jerry, and he does not have a lot of time either, but he has a son who's 17 and about to turn 18. Who is into Magic quite a bit. So when we play, we all play. It's kind of like, you know, me and Jerry will get together and talk to his son and find out kind of what the new cards are, because, you know, his son is so into it and is knows what kind of cards we might gravitate towards. So he gives us the rundown of the new cards that seem broken or seem good or whatever, or of just, you know, of interest to look at. So but it's been, I mean, we got together a couple months ago and played for an afternoon. And then before that, it had been like 6 to 8 months since I had played. And so it's very infrequent that I play.
Yeah, I can imagine that it's got to be time consuming to create something like that. So, and like you said, 12 to 15 hours a day working on it. So,
yeah.
You know, Corey, do you got any other questions? Anything you're burning in your brain? Be careful not to burn the whole thing up.
Not really. One quick question that was kind of coming up while we were talking about 52. Like, I know you did the issue of 52 with the origin of Robin. Did you do any other work on 52 than that?
Let's see. I did two origin stories, and I did through a weird story or through a weird progression of events, I did like an 8-page, either 6 or 8 pages, for an issue of 52 that ended up getting redrawn over my layouts by another artist. So I did not know that would be the case at the time. It's a long sort of story that I could not give you details about anyway, but it was like I went to go pick up the issue and I saw my pages, but they were drawn by someone else. And I was like, what? Because that was something that had never happened to me before and has not happened since. So the you know, I had a little involvement as evidenced by the origin stuff, but I had even more involvement that people don't know because I wasn't credited. It's a weird situation.
That seems rather unfortunate.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been just great looking at, you know, looking at your stuff. You know, I went back and made sure and looking at some of the stuff you've done on Green Arrow recently, and I'm just like looking at issue zero, and there's that one splash page, just this huge page, and it's just one of my favorite pages in the whole since New 52 came out. So
thank you very much. Yeah, the only in your introduction, everything was correct and on target. There was one thing you had left out. I drew the Captain Atom series, the New 52 Captain Atom, which was 12 issues plus an issue zero, so 13 issues. And that was a very unusual style for me. I was trying like 10 brand new things on the book, and it did not, you know, DC really liked the direction that we were going, and they gave us as long as they could, but the sales were just not there to keep the book around. So it ended up getting canceled. It almost got canceled like 5 issues earlier, but and there were books that had higher sales than us. And DC, because they liked the unique direction we were going in and the stuff that I was doing, you know, artistically and stuff, was generous enough to give us another, you know, however many issues to try to see if we could right the ship, so to speak, sales wise. But, you know, it's hard to you cannot predict or make, you know, if there was a formula for making something a commercial success, every corporation would use that, you know. And so there's some things that work, but if you try something that's new, it's very hard to make it stick. So ours did not stick. But we had a good time on the story. I bring up all this stuff about the, you know, it having low sales because there was some mention of that online, that there was a couple of books that had gotten canceled before ours. but you know, that had higher sales than ours. But sales by itself is not the reason, not the sole reason for a book to have longevity, or, you know, it's a big reason. But if a book is a high concept book or has a unique twist on something that DC thinks this may bear fruit later on if we give it some more time, if they have, in other words, if they have more faith in it, they can try to let the book ride out and see if it finds a following. So it's a good, it's like, it feels good as a good will gesture that they kept us around, but ultimately it didn't bear out.
Yeah, it's a cutthroat business. no, but it's always, I wasn't personally reading that series, but, you know, it's crazy to see how those things go. You can watch, you know, and everyone's going to have their opinion. You know, kind of that, you know, a nice parallel is to look at the, you know, the DC Nation on Cartoon Network right now. You know, there's a huge outcry, but the ratings weren't there, so Cartoon Network's canceling it. But, you know, it's the same, you know, I feel like it's kind of that same concept of, you know, they tried to give it as much time as they could, but it just didn't work out.
Right. Yeah. And there's only, you know, there's only so long that you can, that you can financially support something that if it's not profitable or less than profitable without the company trying to go somewhere else to make it work. It is cutthroat. Yeah. But you know, you can only ride the wave so long.
Right. Now Corey, was that you?
What, the phone? No, that was me, actually.
Oh, my, darn, I was mic just went off. Bust his chops for it.
No, it was Corey then. You should definitely bust his chops about it.
Yeah, I mean, he usually does that. He tends to leave his phone on and sitting on the desk while we're recording, so it's not the first time he's done it.
Yeah, Corey.
are you kidding me? My ringer hasn't been on in like 6 months.
Shh, we don't insult the guests.
I do.
One of the cool things that I see, you know, that you do on your website, freddyart.com, is you take the commissions. And actually, I did see something that you're going to be stopping commission orders tomorrow.
Yes.
The 31st, yeah. On your website, and you're going to start doing only commissions. Did I see at cons? Yes.
Correct.
Only at cons, yeah. After that. So, and it looks like you have a pretty full con schedule, but I will say, seeing the things you're doing with Ink Wash, I'm going to probably be saving up to get a commission from you, because your Ink Washes are amazing. They just look so cool.
Thank you. Thanks. That was that came from a lot of experimenting with convention sketches, and then, you know, because at first I was just doing pen and ink art, and then I was adding some gray tones with pencil, and then I started. I would do this thing where it's a really bad way of getting gray, but where you would, as soon as you would use like a brush marker, then I would take a Q-tip and dip it in water and just kind of streak it out to give it some gradation or some gray value. And then that evolved into going legit, so to speak, with Ink Wash, where you actually take India ink and put it into little containers and diluting it with a certain amount of water. And, so you're, basic, I mean, it's like you're adding, it's kind of like you're painting, you're kind of watercolor painting. And so now, you know, it's kind of a combination of all that stuff. I'm using ink wash, sometimes watercolor, pencils that I then liquefy with a water brush, pencil, just regular graphite, and then even some Copic markers, you know, to kind of reinforce and make the gradations a little smoother. So they all kind of work together to give a more... hopefully, you know, varied and full look to it.
Yeah. Now you do have a video of this on your website for, you know, how the commission process works, but what tips do you have for somebody that's looking for a commission? Kind of the description process, what exactly they're looking for? I mean, what is the best way to kind of let you know what the things that you're looking for in a commission?
On my website, I've got the ordering page I have makes things hopefully very clear with the different styles that I offer. Like, you can get just a pencil piece of art, and then you can get one that is ink wash, like we were just describing, and then one that is pen and ink. I think the first two people probably know what it is by now, but the pen and ink one is if you look at an original piece of black and white comic book art, a traditional piece, there's a lot of like hatching and cross hatching and feathering and that sort of thing. And so that's what a pen and ink one is. It's, you know, meaning there's no shades of gray unless it's the illusion created by hatching and cross hatching. And that actually takes me the most time. So I actually charge the most for pen and ink pieces because there's a slower, more deliberate craft involved in creating pen and ink artwork. With ink wash, it is more pliable. It's more malleable. It can be a little bit more messy and still give a finished look. But when it comes to pen and ink, you have to be much, at least in my opinion, have to be much more controlled with it. But at conventions, I usually have a lot of examples of the types of art. You know, usually people want either a bust shot, which is kind of like from the waist up, or they want a full figure, or just want a really fast head sketch that's just the head and part of the neck or something. Those are usually the types of options. So I only offer a few options at conventions just because if not, it can get confusing. Like if I said, you know, pencil, ink wash, or ink, and you can get, you know, a full figure, a bust, or a headshot, you can get it on these three different sizes of paper, it can look like a really complex sort of thing you're trying to figure out. So I'll show a couple of examples and let people choose from those. But if they have a more unique idea, you know, then we talk about it from there. But most people just, the most common commission is a bust, and it's usually ink wash because those are the bust you still get. You know, if it's Superman, you don't necessarily need to see his boots. You know, you still get a good shot of Superman with just a bust. And ink wash is, you know, I think a lot of people like that because you don't need color to give it that rounded value. You have all those other shades of tonal shades. Using just gray.
Yeah, personally, I'm as much as I love, you know, certain color pieces, I think just a well done black and white is one of the. I think it's a cleanliness thing for me. I don't know.
I agree. Yeah, I agree with you. And I think that there's certain books that would probably benefit with just staying black and white, at least from my perception of the artwork, but. From the general audience, the average person picking up the comic book, the sales would not be very good on those books even. So, you know, it just from a publisher's perspective, they usually have to go with a full color book every time.
Now it looks from your website, I see about 9 cons this year. So it looks like St. Louis for Wizard World, Planet Comic Con. Where is Planet Comic Con? I don't know where that one is.
That is like my local convention. It is in Kansas City. Even though I live in Missouri, I live right on the other side of the state line from Kansas. So the convention is less than 40 minutes or something from me. But it has increased in size the last like 5 years. Every year it's gotten bigger and bigger. And so like this year we're even having several editors from Marvel, like C.B. Cebulski, Nick Lowe. Nick Lowe is the editor from X-Men. And I think maybe one other, I'm pretty sure there's a third name. I can't think of him right now. And that to me is how I measure conventions. I mean, having a big name artist, of course, is a big draw for the general public and stuff. But if you're attracting big name editors, that's a pretty big incentive for the size of the convention. Yeah, that's the local Kansas show. And there's possible I might be attending. There's two other conventions that are talking to me, but I'm not really sure if 9 shows is a lot of shows. So I don't know if I want to go up to 11 shows, you know, in a single year.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we're you know, C2E2, obviously. I think everyone's doing C2E2 this year. I swear everyone is there.
Yeah, it's a big show. Although opposite of that was the Calgary, I think it's called the Calgary Expo or something, Fan Expo in in Canada, and Dave Finch is going to be there to that one. There's a lot of Francis Manipal and a bunch of other guys that are pretty big name are going to be there. But it's in Canada, so it's not, you know, there's not going to be as many Americans that are going to flock up there.
Yeah, I see you're also going to Australia for the Melbourne show. That's amazing. Of course, San Diego.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I said, of course, San Diego and New York. Everyone does those. but yeah, no, go ahead and talk about Melbourne, because that's got to be a heck of an awesome trip.
Yeah. Let's see. Last year, so in 2012, I attended the a convention in Australia, but it was in a place called Adelaide, which is much smaller of a convention than the Melbourne show. But my wife and I had a great time in Australia, and although this is not convention related, this part is not. That convention was great, but we also, while we were there, they have like a wildlife preserve park place where you can kind of like a petting zoo, but there's like, you know, 8 foot tall kangaroos. So we spent most of a day at this wildlife preserve park, whatever it's called. I can't remember what it's called, but and my wife got to hold a koala, and that was something that she's wanted to do since she was a little girl, apparently. And that was a really big deal. You know, I was terrified of a koala because they're much bigger and they have a lot of muscle mass, but they're much bigger in person. At least for me, I was like, wow, that's a big animal. You know, it's like the size of a medium sized dog. But if you're trying to hold that and they've got really long claws, and from my perception, like, I was raised around cats and dogs, I know what they look like if they're becoming aggressive or if they're feeling temperamental. But I don't know what a koala looks like if it's in a bad mood. So I was pretty nervous. Everything worked out fine. You know, all the handlers were told us exactly what to do, but I was nervous about that. Anyway, we had such...
What's that? I've seen, you'll know if a koala's in a bad mood.
Yeah, I usually have a scowl on my face. The irony of that's how my last name is pronounced.
if you're around a cat, and a cat is in a bad mood, it might basically look like it's still relaxed, but it might start flipping its tail around when it's getting annoyed. Or it might start laying its ears back, but really it's not like it's perched up with its back raised and stuff yet. You know, so those early signs of aggression or annoyance are the ones that are commonly picked up on, at least by me, you know, or the same thing with a dog, that there's a certain posture or rigidity that comes with them. And, you know, when it came to a koala, I don't know, and they've got huge claws, or when it came to a kangaroo, that, you know, at that point you're not even around handlers, you're just walking around the preserve. So there's huge kangaroos, and I don't know much about their temperament either, you know, and they would mess you up. There's not much you could do. I did have the impulse to jump on the back of an emu, but I'm not joking. It was like this impulse that I kind of had to double check my body from moving forward towards it. You know, I just thought it would be so cool to jump on it. But anyway, we had such a good time at the convention that the same organizers invited us back and for the bigger show. So we're really looking forward to that. And everybody who we met at the show was super nice. It was a great, you know, great experience.
So I'll have to tell the organizers of Cherry Capital Con, bring in koalas, kangaroos, emus. Actually, just bring in an emu.
Yeah, bring them all in and set them free among the crowd. No,
we've got you and Pat. We've got you. We've got Muse. That's enough animals.
Poor Muse. just so you're in on the joke, Muse is one of our local writers. He writes a webcomic here locally, and he's kind of our whipping boy. So.
Well, does he like it, or is he? Because I'm gonna say that's not very nice, unless he's in on the joke and thinks it's funny.
Oh, he's always in on the joke. He dishes it back pretty good too. So,
okay, all right, that's good.
but yeah, I mean, it looks like you got a busy year this year. We are actually going to be attending a couple cons ourselves. We had set up at Cherry Capital, and then we're gonna actually head down to Cincinnati in September for the new CincyCon. So. that's going to be a riot. So we're looking forward to this. Kind of our first year of existence. You know, we started back in August, so just so you have a little information on us too. So we're still getting our feet wet. We're still kind of trying to get things together, and you know, hopefully this year we're able to get some exposure out there. So, you know, is there anything you want to address? Anything that you've got going on that you want to talk about, or anything that we didn't cover?
I think you guys did a good job of covering stuff. And you already mentioned my website, which is freddyart.com, but I'm pretty active on Twitter and relatively active on Facebook as well. If anyone's interested in connecting or seeing my artwork, just go to freddyart.com, and I've got links, a ton of artwork that you can look at all for free and, you know, to look at. Links to my Facebook and Twitter. And I regularly post things from my, you know, like work in progress art, where I'm taking photos and sometimes video of artwork as I'm working on it, so that you can see the different steps of construction. And even if you're not an artist, you might enjoy that, but I would have found it very useful in my earlier, you know, my youth, to have seen somebody construct a figure and then, you know, seeing them draw a hand, and then, you know, at one stage, and then the next stage, you can see that they erased it and drew another arm. And even if there's no sort of commentary as to why that happened, it's good to see that sort of thing happens, meaning there's a certain varnish to the finished artwork of a comic book. And it can be intimidating if you're a new artist and you're trying to compete with that, or trying to get in that mindset. It just seems like it's insurmountable. But everybody messes up. That's why they have, you know, erasers for your pencils, and there's a lot of stuff behind the scenes that you don't see, like people trying things and it not working for hours. So anyway, I'm kind of rambling on that, but you know, Facebook and Twitter are a good place to see my artwork. So
yeah, I just actually happened to open up your Twitter, and I happened to notice the Green Lantern logo, and I see your Lara cover that you have posted on your Twitter. That's just awesome.
Thank you. Thanks. Yeah, that's a commission. It's on a comic blank. You probably know that, but I'm describing it to anyone who is hearing this later, especially if I have other artwork in front of it. But so I did not draw a cover for Green Lantern that got published. This is just for like a commission piece. But there's probably like another 20 plus pieces that I had not posted yet, but finding the time, and you also have to space it out so that people don't get frustrated with you dumping 20 sketches on them all at once. I've got quite a few other commissions. So basically I post almost every commission that I end up drawing. I post it on my Facebook and Twitter. So it's a good place if you just want to see artwork that you wouldn't probably see anywhere else.
Yeah. And Twitter is at Freddy Art. Just like his website is freddyart.com. So, Your Facebook, just search Freddie E. Williams II, and you'll find him. If I can find him, anybody can.
Yeah, and the portal for all that stuff, even my YouTube and stuff, is all just, if you go to freddyart.com, you can find, you know, hopefully, I try to make it as user-friendly as I could. Hopefully, it's easy to navigate, and, you know.
Yeah, I like your website. I really do. It's I was on it a lot for the past couple weeks, getting ready to make sure I didn't sound like an idiot.
but, a little late for that, bro.
Yeah, it always.
No, I think you did get. I mean, you were well researched, so I appreciate that.
And that's what I try to. You know, I didn't want to come off and be like, oh, let's just talk out of our butts. it wouldn't be the first time, but we try to limit those times. but yeah, I mean, it's just the whole feel of your website. You can tell it's an artist's website and everything. So, but yeah, I mean, it's been great talking to you. We really, really appreciate you taking some time out for us. I mean, obviously, you're really busy and you've got a bunch of stuff going on. Brain Boy for Dark Horse. So that's, I'm going to be interested to see that.
Thank you for having me on. The Brain Boy thing is the name Brain Boy is just such a weird name, but the script is being written by I know his first name is Fred, and it's Fred Van something. Let me look it up real quick. We've emailed like a million times, but I never have had to say his name out loud. Let me
Fred Van Lente. L-E-N-T-E.
Van, yeah, Lente. Yeah, that would make sense. V-A-N-L-E-N-T-E. Anyway, yep. Very cool guy, writing a very good outline for the Brain Boy. It's going to be a series of short stories in Dark Horse Presents, but we've recently been doing all the character designs for that, and very fun stuff. It's fun. Like I mean, I was already saying this, but it's really fun just getting to work on. You know, in one day, I was emailing with editors from Dark Horse, DC, and IDW. You know, like 5 times each that day, you know, just going back and forth and juggling sketches and all this stuff. And that, that's really exciting, you know, to do. It's that variety, and it feels like you're connected to those different companies, and it's just fun being involved in all that stuff. Cause, you know, working on monthly comics can sometimes, as much as you love it, it can get redundant if all you're drawing is the same guy or the same 2 or 3 characters in a book. So getting that variety is exciting.
Well, Corey, you got anything else?
Yeah, Corey. You got anything else? Corey.
Well, Freddie.
he's got a 3-year-old in the background.
Yeah, I was going to say, the kid seemed like they had
apparently,
something to say. Apparently
Jude's got a question. I don't know. no, I think I'm good. You answered all the questions I could think of.
I know, I've been racking my brain trying to make sure I got all the questions, but yeah, I think we've done pretty good, and you know, we've kept you for quite a while. We've been together for quite a while right now. I just looked at the timer on our recording, and it's a little longer than I expected it to be.
Yeah, that's cool. I've been drawn the whole time, so you know, you have not put me out. So if you can think of anything else, that's cool, and if not, we can. You know, we can wrap stuff up, but either way is cool with me.
No, I think we've got it. We really, once again, we want to really thank you for coming out. Or coming on with us, I should say. We're looking forward to meeting you. I may be down personally at C2E2 for my brother's bachelor party. That's where he wants to do his bachelor party, is at C2E2, because we can't afford to do San Diego.
That'll be a good bachelor party, though. I'm not a real big, you know, fan of like the whole wild night out where you go to a, you know, like exotic dancers and all this other stuff. I think that on my bachelor party, we stayed and played Magic at the house. So we bought like a booster box and everybody drafted. Like that was what we did. But sounds like that would be a good bachelor. Are you gonna do the exotic dancing as well, but just be at C2 in the Chicago area doing the C2E2 thing, and then also going to the strip clubs or something?
Me personally, I'll probably be at the con every minute that I can be at it, because I'm sure I've never been to C2E2 yet, so I'm sure there'll be plenty of things that I'll want to see. But so it's I don't know what their plans are, but I'm sure by the time I get out of the con, I'll be just ready to go to bed.
Yeah, that can be exhausting.
Don't worry, I'll make sure I'm there. It'll be a wild time.
Oh boy, I was hoping you weren't invited.
Who needs an invite?
But yeah, we're really looking forward to meeting you in person. It'll be a lot of fun, and you know, we can't thank you enough, and we can't wait to see you. So thanks for joining us, Freddie. And you know, feel free to stay in touch with whatever you've got going on. We'll be more than happy to throw it out there whenever you've got it. So,
okay, great. Yeah, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
All right, we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, okay. Freddie.
Thank you.
Well, that's going to do it for this edition of Digital Nerdage. You know, it was great to have Freddie on, and we can't wait to meet him. Like I said, and it's going to be an awesome year for conventions. Like I said, we will be at Cherry Capital Con and Memorial Day weekend in Traverse City, and we will also be attending Cincinnati Comic Con the first weekend of September. So we will we're really looking forward to a lot of cool stuff going on, and you know, hope that you guys are enjoying what we're doing. Let us know. Obviously, facebook.com/digitalnerdage. Twitter.com/digitalnerdage. I am still working on the website at digitalnerdage.com, but it is set up to automatically redirect to where we're hosting right now, so don't worry about that. It will get you where you need to go. But like always, thanks for listening. Corey, any last thoughts?
You suck.
And of course he has to be that way. you know, it's been a great time, and we hope that you enjoyed it. Let us know how we did.
Bye, everybody.